Chapter 14. The following morning, Mirko said Mass shortly after dawn. Having breakfasted, he went over to the school. He hadn't taken a Latin class there for over 6 weeks. Too long, he thought. They'll be forgetting what I taught them. But he was pleasantly surprised. The children had been expecting him. They stood as he came in and chanted joyfully, Ave Pater Mirko. They had kept up their Latin. Another monk had given some lessons. The two Ivarca princesses were still ahead of the rest. The British boy, Sinan, son of Kustenin, was also doing well. Mirko noticed that he was sitting beside the lone Saxon pupil with no sign of enmity between them. Also, the Kuala and Leinster boys were no longer clustered in their separate factions. The teachers, he thought, must have worked out a reconciliation after the regrettable incident of the fighting choir. The children were eager to hear about his travels, and he told them as much as time allowed. Looking at the 25 alert, intelligent children before him, he realized afresh what a worthwhile activity this school was, learning not only to understand Latin, but also to honor God, love his people, and respect his creation. This group, at least, would not add to the scars of cruelty and brutality that disfigured the world. As soon as Mirko left the school, he paid a short visit to the scriptorium. There he found Donnacha helping the young scribe Flann to make a sketch, later to be illuminated, of the flight into Egypt. This is his third attempt, Father Mirko, said Donnacha, who was struggling to be patient. In the first one, St. Joseph was wearing a sword, and in the second there were no halos. Master Scriptor, said Flann plaintively, wouldn't St. Joseph need a sword for protection on a journey like that? No, my son, he was a carpenter, not a warrior. He'd have had a staff. Well, I'm sure this sketch will be suitable. Mirko bent over the sketch. He pointed to one feature of it, then raised an eyebrow. Donnacha looked too, then exploded. For God's sake, Flann, the ass doesn't get a halo. If you're certain about that, I'll do it again without that halo, said Flann solemnly. But I do hope you're not going to use any bad language, Brother Donnacha, because I'd hate to be the cause of you getting a penance. The other scribes grinned. Everyone knew the penance for bad language was 2 days on bread and water. It would take more than you to make me use bad language. Calm down, everybody, Mirko intervened. Everything seems in order except that misplaced halo, Flann, so I'm sure your fourth sketch will satisfy Brother Donnacha. Mirko left them and went outside. The rain had stopped. He walked up and down in the enclosure. The school and the scriptorium had been brief distractions from his task. In his mind, he tried to put together the elements of an introduction for his life of Patrick. By now, he almost felt that he knew the saint personally, with his driving missionary zeal, his devotion to Holy Scripture, his tough honesty, his flashes of kindness and protectiveness towards his converts and others, his modesty about his personal qualities. As far as Mirko knew, no one had done a full and coherent life of the saint before, though several scholars had attempted it. His work was bound to attract criticism from various quarters, Kildare and the anti-Sleaty faction in Armagh foremost among them. Abbot Aye himself might be dissatisfied. It would be rather like being in a boat on a rough sea with wind and waves slapping at you, he thought, remembering his recent experience. He must dedicate the work to his abbot, put it under God's protection, and admit that his own knowledge and research were less than perfect. These thoughts were still in his mind when he and Donnacha returned to the library at midday and sat at the table facing Abbot A and Prior Hunkad. A had Donnacha's notes spread out before him. Brother Donnacha, I find your notes excellent in content, order, and legibility, he said. I might even call them elegant, he added, with a twinkle in his eye. Wouldn't you agree, Hunkad? I suppose so, Father Abbot, said Hunkad grudgingly. Donnacha blushed red. Members of the Sleaty community were seldom known to praise each other. The abbot went on. Mirko, you now have more than enough material to write the life of Patrick. Apart from the saint's own writings, you have the various episodes in Ulton's book, which I am giving back to you now. It includes the information given to Ulton by that foreign scholar about Patrick's activities between his escape and his return. Then you have Donnacha's very thorough notes of what you were told in Ardbrechen, Coole, Brega, and in the north, plus the information supplied by our British friend Costennan. And you've got rid of some bits of folklore that seem unfounded and not even uplifting. I'll tell you how I feel you could put all that to the best use. First, the Tara episode is central, the turning point of Ireland's conversion. You need to heighten the drama and illuminate the fiery conflict between paganism and Christianity, ending in the victory of the cross. Make it really immediate and vivid to the reader or the listener, because this will surely be read aloud. Screw up the tension, name the Druids, use the deer episode. Remember, you are honouring Patrick, illuminating and illustrating, not just marking down a bald list of facts. Now, I've had a good look at the miracles and other episodes of Patrick's travels around Ireland, both in Donnacha's notes and in Ulton's book. The choice of which to use, I leave largely to you, but I saw one that could well be left out, the account of a man 120 feet tall being brought back from the dead. Those notions of gigantism are too closely associated with pagan legend, I believe. On the other hand, you have several episodes that illustrate Patrick's virtues, and you should certainly use those. His rescue of a fawn from his followers who are going to kill it, that symbolizes his kindness. Again, he simply says something like, "So be it," when someone gives him a valuable cauldron, and repeats, "So be it," when the donor changes his mind and takes it back. That's an example of his detachment from possessions. When he lit up the night to help a distressed charioteer find his straying horses, it showed the saint's helpfulness to others. I also saw a few episodes that could be used as a warning to wrongdoers. For instance, there is the death of the pirate and slaver Caroticus following his condemnation by Patrick. The business of Caroticus being turned into a fox could be let stand, I think, as a piece of illumination. Something I've mentioned before as a sort of diplomatic requirement, your work needs to provide support for Armagh's jurisdiction. The story of the repentant bandit, McQuill, is useful for that purpose. It's Patrick who imposes on him the penance of being set adrift in a boat, leading eventually to McQuill ending up as a bishop in the Isle of Man. The episode of Patrick going to die at Saul instead of Armagh is awkward, but it must already be in the Armagh patrician material, because your northern informants were basing themselves largely on that. You can't just leave it out. It seems too well supported. But you might counterbalance it by referring to Patrick as Bishop of Ireland and stressing his link with Armagh. Now a point that's very important to our monastery. Be sure not to forget to mention our founder Fiuk's connection with Patrick during the Tara episode, and that we have his relics here at Sleaty. Also, I mentioned this before, but I stress it again now. Use all the scriptural parallels you can find, for instance by comparing King Laera and his Druids to the pagan Babylonians. Donnacha spoke up. "May I ask a question here, Father Abbot? I know those scriptural references are intended to honour Patrick, but don't they have another purpose too?" "They do indeed, my son. What would you think it is?" "I think it's to illustrate that God's action in the world isn't just a matter of once-off events, but that it's a continuing process. For instance, the skies opened for Stephen, the first martyr, so that he saw heaven before he was stoned to death, and again, as we were told, for Patrick's disciple Benignus." "Yes, Donnacha, that is indeed the second reason." "So, Mirko," the abbot continued, "let me sum up my final advice to you. Uplift, illuminate, honour the saint, help your community, support Armagh. I, and all of us, will be very appreciative if you can do all that. As to the timing, we're now well into autumn. I want you to start at once and finish by Imbolc, St. Bridget's Day, or shortly after. I know that doesn't give you as long as you might like, but you'll get every support, including relief from liturgical requirements and other duties. You need only ask. Why the time pressure? Well, partly because of some news I got yesterday. You saw those two visitors from Clonmacnoise. they told me that two monks of their community returned recently from a visit to Connacht, where they met Bishop Tirochán. He's quite old now and will be retiring next summer. And here's the most interesting part. He has announced his intention of travelling to Armagh in the summer. There he will start writing his own life of Patrick. It seems to me Tirochán is most concerned that some monasteries have been falling away from Armagh's jurisdiction. So he says that most of his account will be devoted to listing the foundations that Patrick or his disciples established, so as to copper-fasten Armagh's claim on them. Exactly the kind of travel guide approach that Ultan so disliked long ago, as Abbot Uchig told you. Now, it's important to us here that your completed work is both earlier and better than Tirochán's. It'll be better, all right. I'd say that's already clear. But earlier? You see, I'll be going to Armagh in the spring by Beltane May Day at the latest. My purpose will be to surprise Abbot Chéguin and the rest of them by laying on the table what will be the first complete, coherent and uplifting life of their own patron saint produced here at Sleaty by our gifted master scriptor. That will stop our Armagh opponents in their tracks. I'm quite looking forward to it. And now, all that remains for me to say is Benacht de Erin Ober. God bless the task. I'll do my very best, Father Abbot, Mirko replied, somewhat overcome. Excuse me, Father Abbot, Cunchet intervened. We need at least two copies for the library here, if you're bringing the original to Armagh. Very true, Cunchet. Mirko, can you arrange for copies to be made in the scriptorium of each part as soon as it's finalised? The scribe's other work can be postponed as necessary. Certainly I can, Father Abbot. The meeting was over. Mirko and Donnacha left the library, their heads full of the abbot's requirements.